Chapter 19. Arrival at Tresolian. Curling tendrils of energy chased the Hrafnakel from the Empyrean. Geller shields flickered maddeningly with an excess of energies. Other ships followed in close formation, bouncing on complex gravitic waves. Before they were fully out of the bleed of the warp, the ships ignited their real space engines, adjusted their flight paths, and raced for the binary pair. With reckless speed, the space wolves came to Tresolian. Three suns created a complex gravity map. The Vilca Fenrica entered at the lesser Mandeville on the edge of the binary's shared determination shock, well away from the primary star and the traitor fleet moored around its worlds, far enough away for their warp signatures to remain hidden. Russ sprawled in his throne upon the command deck. Mortals and legionaries filled the machine pits and crew galleries. Tresolian 2A and 2B dominated the oculus. Russ's fleet were dark shapes coasting on void tinted a dreary red. Reports came in from the Jarls of the Legion and the warriors assigned to ship command, announcing safe warp passage. Though their emergence into real space had been smoother than their arrival at Fenris, Russ kept an ear on the chatter around the Vox stations, half expecting high losses from their turbulent journey. The last report came in.
"The fleet has arrived without loss, my lord," announced a fleet carl.
"Good omen," said Lehman Russ, and he sat forwards. "Have we been detected?"
"Our vessels are hidden in the electromagnetic envelope of the two lesser stars, my king," said the carl. "We are as yet unseen."
"Horus has two eyes," said Russ. "One spies into the warp."
"Rune priests, have my brother's sorcerers seen us?"
The psykers of his legion clustered together, heads nearly touching, as they debated the meaning of the runes they cast upon the floor. One looked up. Mate Farscryer, he was called, a priest of Tratra. Russ didn't know him well, but he was more familiar than some who had been promoted to take the place of the goatee sacrificed for his trip to the Underverse.
"They are blinded, Lord of Winter. They do not see us in the Verse, the Oververse, or in the Underverse."
Russ grinned. His sharp teeth showed pink in the turbulent glow of the stars.
"I trust you, my carls, and my warriors, to keep it that way," said Russ. "Take us between the binary towards the primary sun, full speed. I want as much energy committed to the engines as they will take. Where fleets of lesser men match the speed of the slowest, today we strive to sail at the speed of the fastest, my sons. Aegis to maximum. Charge weapons batteries. As soon as we are past this binary, Horus will see us and he will come for us. We must strike swiftly to decapitate the serpent."
Adepts of the new Adeptus Mechanicus began their hymns to the machines. Russ observed them ruefully. Dawn called him a hypocrite. If that was so, so was their father, who had decried all religions as false, save when it suited him. Everything came down to expediency in the end. Russ took after him in that way. The Hrafnakel juddered. The multiple machine voices of its systems raised in a plaintive whine. The chanting took on a soothing tone. Grumbling at the imposition, the reactor of the Hrafnakel burned hotter, a caged star more potent than the feeble twins the ship approached. The press of acceleration weighed on the bodies of the crew, and the stars swelled with increasing rapidity. With the certainty of an avalanche, the Vilca Fenrica's void ships moved towards the gulf between the subsidiary suns of Tresolian. The binaries were small and red, reckoned cool for stars. Such stellar objects were common, and though prone to fitful effusions of radiation, they were largely benign. Many habitable worlds orbited their sort in short years, close in, where seasons passed in the space of weeks and the sky was always ruddy. Not so the Tresolian twins. At a mere 50 million kilometres apart, they were greatly perturbed by one another's gravity wells, and the primary star's influence exacerbated that. Plumes of incandescent gases arced out from them towards their opposites, like the arms of lovers who could not quite touch. The space between was a boiling cauldron of natural plasmas and energetic particles. Already, at 50 million kilometres away, the shields of the Vilca Fenrica's void craft sparkled with particular interference. Russ glanced at a display in an auger pit, his post-human eyes able to pick out the detail. His route took the fleet directly between. Plotting a course through the gulf was fraught with risk. Gravity eddies and coronal mass ejections, as deadly as any starship's weapon, could rip the ships apart. But not one member of the Legion raised their voice in concern. They strained at the leash, eager to hunt. The perils of the strait meant nothing. From the dangers of the warp to the no less deadly breath of stars, the Harafnakel eagerly flew.
"Maintain heading," said Russ.
The stars grew swiftly. The ships of the Vilca Fenrica were under full motive power, still accelerating, their velocity approaching a substantial portion of the speed of light. Playful curlicues of fire licked out from the twin suns to meet them. Radiation flare danced over the ship's void shields. The Harafnakel groaned as it bumped over frame ructions in space-time, ploughed up by the star's conflicting mass. Mortal crew moved to adjust the integrity fields that held the ship together.
"All spixes are blind. Auger eyes and Picta units non-functional, my king," spoke a Carl.
"Good," said Russ. "If we cannot see, the enemy will also be blind to our approach."
That was the gambit. Punch through the boiling space between the stars and take Horus by surprise. Russ calculated taking the more dangerous route would gain his fleet a precious 6.5 hours, where they would not be seen, reducing the time of their visible passage in system towards the vengeful spirit to a mere 3. That was 6.5 hours less of manoeuvring time for the arch-traitor. 6.5 hours less to loose long-range torpedoes and mass strikes towards the Wolf fleet. 6.5 hours could win a war. Russ grinned. He could imagine the look on Horus's face as the Vilca Fenrica burst out of the broiling zone between the stars, and it made him happy. Naturally, they had to perform this feat first. Naturally, Russ expected his men to succeed. Long ribbons of energized gas glowed across the straits. Faint at first, they grew more visible the nearer the ship sailed, sketching in the lines of conflicting riptides. The vox was a squealing howl of competing stellar voices, angry pulses of natural radio waves that sounded at times as if intelligence lay behind their emissions, and secret messages were hidden within. The red light intensified. Never bright, it grew thicker, until it saturated everything and wounded vision with its strength. Alarms blared. The Harafnakel entered the straits proper. Shouting Carls raised the opacity of the Oculus's armor glass. Far-flung stars went out. The suns remained, darkly forbidding. The flagship groaned. It dropped and swerved, its course upset by the arguments of the twins. It ran the knife edge between two gravity wells, teetering one way, then the other, threatening to slip down to fiery ruin. The activities of Russ's ship Carls, off-worlders in the main, for the natives of Fenris were poorly suited to manning void ships, picked up tempo. They shouted their communications where before they were muted. The peaceful toil of the bridge took on the aspect of battle, but this time physics itself was their foe. Electric squalls battered at the shields. Gravity fluctuations made the Harafnakel yaw and dive. The ride was bumpier than an ice-rigged wolf ship riding over rocky beaches. They were deep in the straits now. The twin suns framed the edges of the Oculus with their round bellies, the Harafnakel so close to them that the internal temperature of the ship soared and the gaseous fringes of the sun's photospheres writhed behind the darkened armor glass. Grimnir spat on the floor to ward off Maleficarum. He was not the only one.
"It is a vision of hell," he said. They are souls burning in torment.
140 years Blackblood had sailed upland and been party to all the wonders of Imperial science. Superstition died hard. The fleet drove on, accelerating all the while. The suns pressed in, threatening to slam together and crush the ship. On the far side of the straits, the cool safety of the void beckoned.
"We're nearly through!"
shouted an exuberant brother. The long fangs among the pack voiced disapproval.
"Oh, you will bring misfortune on us,"
chided one.
"Never count on land before it is beneath your feet," agreed Russ.
The brother was chastened.
"Too late," said Grimnir.
He made a warding eye on his forehead, curving forefinger and thumb into an oval.
"Weird has been challenged by his unwise words, and fate never backs down."
Klaxons sang out distress. Instruments all over the ship turned red, deepening the rubicund twilight of the stars shining through the darkened oculus.
"Solar flare!"
one of the carls at the Orspectorium screamed. They felt it before they saw it, a great push of power licking out from Tresolian 2A. The vox crackled louder, bombarded by a particle sleet, a trillion, trillion strong. Before the oculus's dimming properties reacted, the light in the bridge grew brighter. The flare passed close to the Harafnikel's prow, like a fern or a whip slowly uncoiling. Its position and speed were illusory. It was 1,000,000 kilometers ahead. It moved 100,000 kilometers a second. It was so enormous, it warped perception.
"Brace for impact!" roared Grimnir.
A fractal hand of starlight swatted at the void ships as if they were flies. Now the fleet took injury. A miscalculation saw a squadron of torpedo boats veer from the solar flare too steeply. Their trajectory put them hard into the fronds of its trailing side. Two were consumed instantly, their shields overloaded and hulls stripped back to the frame by roiling, multicoloured plasmas. The third was racked by the flare's electromagnetic fields. Its light went out, its engines guttered to nothing, and it tumbled, powerless, towards the outer layers of the nearest star. Russ's carls moved to save it. They sent messages that could not reach it. They hailed ships that could not catch it. They looked at their lord expectantly, willing him to find a way.
"Leave it," said Russ, staring ahead. "If we slow, we will lose more lives."
As he commanded, so he was obeyed. The ship was abandoned to its fate. The starboard star responded to its brother's entreaty, shooting out its own curling lash. In return, the first sent another, and so on, until the void screamed with burning atoms and the Vilka Fenrika flew pell-mell down a twisting gut of fire. Imperial ships were mighty tools of war, but nothing made by man can compete with a star, even ones so puny as the Tresolian binary. Instruments overloaded in showers of sparks, their circuitry fried by a surfeit of the motive force. The priests of the Adeptus Mechanicus moaned, and the Vilka Fenrika could not say if it was in fear or ecstasy. The cruiser Valhall detonated. A dozen escorts were overwhelmed. Void shields all over the fleet buckled under the attentions of the binary as they were beaten hard by stellar scourges. The punishment abated. The tremors subsided.
"We are down to our last shield bank,"
announced the Carl of the Aegis.
"The next one will tear us in half."
"Charge all the capacitors. I want every void generator operating at peak capacity," said Russ. "Take power from the engines. Strengthen the Aegis."
A final blast of power from Tresolian 2B ripped away the blanket of energy protecting the Harafnikel, leaving it exposed to the binary star's wrath.
"Stand by for hull impact!"
yelled the Carl of the Auspex. The blow did not land. The fury of the stars subsided. No more flares burst from the spheres.
"They have had their fill of violence," said Russ.
He relaxed his hands. They were gripping hard at the arms of his throne. As he pronounced those words, the Harafnikel burst through the gravitic envelope and sailed into calmer space. The drag of the suns lessened, and the fleet pulled free. Damage reports came in thick and fast. There had been many casualties. Russ did not hear them. He had his eye fixed on the primary Tacticaria. The main world of the system was an icy moon orbiting a gas giant. 7 large facilities were suspended high over its surface on tall, macro-sized tether tubes. Around it, caught unawares, was the fleet of Horus Lupercal.
I count more than 50 capital ships. Word Bearers, Alpha Legion, Sons of Horus, World Eaters, Iron Warriors. Oh, by the heart of Fenris, it's a feasting table of traitors. A whole lot of them are here, said Grimnir.
They are spread across the system, said Russ. We have them unawares.
He frowned.
And my Huskarl. This is only a fraction of Horus's forces. Can Horus really be here with such a poor fleet? The vengeful spirit, can you see it? Is he here? Find him.
Yes, my Jarl,
responded the Auspex Carl. Then, a moment later,
I have it.
Bring the vengeful spirit to prominence in the Tacticaria, said Russ.
Auspex feeds were adjusted, and within the hololith's ball of light, the vengeful spirit grew from an anonymous sliver of metal to a vast space-borne fortress.
There he is, growled Russ. Make all speed towards the war, master, my sons.
Yes, my lord,
his servants responded.
Such a small distance, said Russ.
Close! For the murder make,
he commanded.
Today, we shall see a reckoning.